Welcome to The Gauge, a podcast brought to you by Green Gauge, the first fully integrated financial services group, bridging the traditional financial services space with the new digital innovations in crypto assets and blockchain. In this series, we gauge expert opinion on the latest tech trends and plan to bring you a measured approach to discussing key developments in the world of blockchain and digital assets. Your host today is Green Gauge's CEO, Sean Kiernan, who speaks to Keith Baer, fellow at the Centre for Alternative Finance at the University of Cambridge. Sean and Keith discuss whether the UK can develop an open banking approach to central bank digital currencies, or CBDCs, and how fast is the UK progressing towards the digital pound. Did the collapse of FTX signal the end of CeFi, or centralised finance, and what are the lessons learned? Is a better way forward a greater convergence between traditional finance standards and decentralised finance tech innovation? And if so, where will that sort of convergence take place in practice?
Keith, I'm very excited to have you with us at this episode of The Gauge. Your reputation precedes you, and I see that you're in stunning Cambridge with a Cambridge jumper on, but I know that for today's discussion, we're speaking with you personally and not on behalf of Cambridge. A warm welcome.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the invitation.
Absolute pleasure. I think there's a lot that you're working on, which is very interesting. If I might just start with asking you about your work as a fellow at the Cambridge Centre for Alternative Finance, what you're doing there, and a little bit of your background, how you got there.
Sure. So in terms of how I got there, I, as you probably recall, I worked for IBM for many years, leading financial markets as an industry on a global basis when I left at end of 2018. In the last few years of that, I spent quite a bit of time working in the area of enterprise blockchain because IBM was investing a lot in that area at the time. And it was a question of internally following the money to some extent. And we saw a lot of opportunity within financial markets. So I was working with institutions like CLS and others in terms of deploying enterprise blockchain. Then was appointed a fellow at Cambridge at the beginning of 2019. Really focused primarily on digital asset research. So you may be familiar with some of the reports we published at that time. We're quite famous for a regular crypto asset benchmarking survey. We did another one on enterprise blockchain and also on the legal and regulatory implications of digital assets. So a whole series of traditional reports, 100-page long to some extent, got very conscious of the fact that not everybody would want to read 100-page reports. So I've been pivoting away from that over the last couple of years to more digital tools. The one that we're most famous for, I think, is CBECI, the Cambridge Bitcoin Electricity Consumption Index, which I think is one of the, if not the most well-recognized, independent and objective assessment of how much electricity is being consumed by the Bitcoin network. And we recently released a greenhouse gas emission model, which also estimates the greenhouse gas and also positions it against other comparative emitters of greenhouse gas as well. We also developed a fintech atlas, which is a kind of a graph-based database of over 3,000 fintechs. It maps them to a taxonomy of the kind of business areas they focus on. We have a timeline in terms of the when they've come into operation, how their business has expanded or contracted over that time, what jurisdictions they operate in, that sort of thing. So that's very much the focus we have going forward is how to increase transparency and understanding what's going on in the world of digital assets through digital tools. And with that in mind, about almost a year ago now, we launched the Cambridge Digital Asset Research Program with the support of a significant number of public and private institutions, including Goldman Sachs, Fidelity Digital Assets, Invesco, MasterCard, Visa, MSCI on the private side, on the public side, the World Bank, the IMF, the BIS Innovation Hub out of Hong Kong, and the DIFC in Dubai, and many others, the FCDO in the UK. And they are supporting us both in terms of supporting the research cost and also the effort in terms of content for three main work streams that we're focused on. The first one, building on what I said on Bitcoin, is the climate impact of crypto assets. The second is around digital money. So here we're building a digital money dashboard for focus in the first instance on stablecoins, but very keen to explore how the evolution of stablecoins versus central bank digital currency evolves over time. So we're looking at things like how they're being used, why they're being used, the flows, the velocity, all of those sorts of things. I'm in the process of talking to some of the blockchain analytics companies and the major stablecoin issuers to help us with that venture. So be on an open access basis. And then along similar lines, focused on DeFi as well, with a view on a DeFi dashboard to understand, similar to what I described on the FinTech Atlas, how the various DeFi protocols interrelate. That's obviously one of the benefits of DeFi is obviously composability, but actually mapping that composability can be a challenge. and also taking a view in terms of information that would help assess the risk of various DeFi protocols in terms of things like elements of centralization they may have in terms of the governance token structure, for instance, and other kind of metrics we might try and include, such as the cyber resilience, that sort of thing. So those are the main research-based activities. So this is a rather long answer to your question. The other thing we're focused on is capacity building. So we have, for the last 2 years, I've run a course, an 8-week online course for global regulators on financial technology and regulatory innovation. We've had about 1,700 or so regulators go through that around the world. Only a week of it is on digital assets, so we're now expanding that week out into an 8-week program in its own right, hoping to have the first cohort of regulators only in the first instance in January. And there we'll be looking at, again, blockchain technology, stablecoins, DeFi, and obviously a major focus on tokenization and a major focus on the regulation of digital assets, which is obviously a fast-moving topic at the moment. And then having gone through this first cohort of regulators, we're keen to expand out into other types of market participants. So those are the main activities, and hopefully that gives you an indication of what we're doing and also my journey in that context as well.
I've always been amazed by what you're able to achieve just in the given hours of the day. And as anticipated at Cambridge, what you're doing is world-class. So I think it's a real credit to us as a country in the UK to what's being achieved, particularly on the research side. I mean, we have, even as a market participant, the mapping of electricity consumption has been hugely interesting and informative. And I think the work which is coming around the mapping of companies in the space, I saw GreenGage was even a very minute mention in what we're doing, but the much bigger field, I think, is of great interest for policymakers. In addition to your work with regulators, I know that you're also on the Bank of England's CBDC, or Central Bank Digital Currency Technology Committee. It would be great to hear some insights. I know you can't give the full detail, but just what you're doing there, what that group is doing, if you could.
Sure. So as you know, the Bank of England launched a task force some time ago on central bank digital currency and two fora. One, an engagement forum, which is focused more on the policy questions, and senior figures from the banking industry, et cetera, are part of that, and including a colleague of mine from Cambridge. And then secondly, the technology forum, which is what you refer to, which I sit on, which has a very wide range of different people on it. Including MDs from the major banks, from the payment companies like card companies like Visa, et cetera, from the big tech companies such as Google and others, and also academia, obviously myself and a colleague from UCL also. So the focus there is, you know, the agenda typically is set by the bank, and the minutes on a Chatham House basis are published on the bank's website as well. So anyone interested could see what the discussion topics were in that respect. And largely it's picked some of the key thorny issues, I would say, around a retail CBDC, and for the participants in the technology forum to present and discuss on those key topics. So that's included discussions, for example, on privacy, which is one of the big questions in terms of a CBDC implementation, how offline payments could be implemented, what the choices are from a technology perspective, also what the use cases may be for programmability. And that's obviously a key opportunity and also a key element of how CBDC could be a basis for innovation for the commercial banks, et cetera. So those kind of thorny topics, and taking a broad range of views from the, you know, different participants, as I said, from all parts of the ecosystem that have an interest in terms of the UK's deployment of a retail CBDC.
I can imagine some fascinating discussions behind the scenes, thorny or otherwise. I'd love to ask, I know in addition, as we said, to your role at Cambridge and the technology forum of the Bank of England for CBDCs, recently you were also involved in a Barclays hackathon, which sounded very interesting. And this involved developing some APIs around use cases for CBDCs. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Sure. So this was a great initiative by Barclays, I think. So Lee Brain, who's an MD at Barclays and also sits on the technology forum. So basically, they took the Bank of England's platform model, which is the working assumption as to if a CBDC is implemented, how that would happen from a technical point of view, meaning that the bank would provide a platform for payment interface providers, which are the commercial banks and any other regulated institution that would act as a distributor of retail CBDC and manage the KYC and AML obligations, etc. So what Barclays did was basically build an API which emulated that platform-based model, and then defined a set of use cases from the relatively trivial in terms of transferring funds into a CBDC wallet to the much more complex, which are reflecting the potential around programmability. So this was a two-day hackathon. Myself, Lee from Barclays, and head of architecture from Visa were the three judges. We had nine firms participating, which included financial institutions such as Lloyds, Barclays themselves, who were excluded from the prize giving, obviously, and a MasterCard, through to some big tech companies like IBM, to smaller services and techs as well. So quite a diverse range. And it was a fascinating experience to see what they came up with, how many of the use cases they were able to succeed with, where their thinking went in terms of where the options were around programmability, et cetera. So really interesting. We had a lot of interest and press interest included in terms of the event itself. And at the end of the day, Lloyds actually succeeded and won, I think, from my point of view, largely because they were very effective in terms of combining a business perspective and a commercial perspective in terms of how the kind of proposition could be implemented to the benefit of Lloyds clients in this context, together with having built a very credible platform on top of Barclays APIs to be able to demonstrate how this could work in practice. So, you know, working through a good number of the use cases that were defined. So it was a really, I think, interesting example, both in terms of what can be achieved in obviously a short period of time, but also showing what the art of the possible is, especially in terms of this question of programmability, which I think is a key element in order to make CBDC deployment of benefit to the commercial banking organizations, the new services and offerings they can offer on top of a CBDC, which may be not so easy in the current environment.
It's obviously a fascinating time. And I think you're at the coalface, so to speak, of not just hackathons, but the broader discussions. One much broader discussion that is going on in the background is open banking generally and how that interfaces with not just payments, which I think is what's going on, but this discussion around programmability. And this is still early days, but I'd love to hear your thoughts if you think it's possible, as we're doing hackathons at the likes of Barclays, but could we do something at a more national level? And I know there is that kind of engagement right now where the Bank of England's looking for that open tender for a 200,000 wallet. I'd love your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of investment and focus and commitment that has gone into the open banking that exists in the UK at the moment and the oversight and governance around that. And to my mind, a retail CBDC is another major contributor to the broader development of a digital economy in the UK and all that potentially means as well. So, I mean, you mentioned the wallet example that the Bank of England are asking for bids for at the moment. There's also Project Rosalind that's been going on, which is a collaboration between the BIS Innovation Hub in the UK, working with the bank to look at how CBDC API could be built. What are the options and benefits and risks associated with that as well? So there are a number of activities that are going on, I think, that are exploring how this existing world of open banking can interoperate and interrelate to the way that retail CBDCs could be implemented as well. And when you layer in the kind of programmability options, basically being able to start tying in payments that may be made with UK CBDC to external events, external rules, and some of that would interface and use open banking as well, potentially, then there's a whole interesting range of opportunities that arise on the back of that as well. So I think, to my mind, it's a kind of potentially fertile ground for innovation, as I said, for the commercial banks leveraging the investments that have already been made by necessity in open banking itself. So it'll be interesting to see, I think, how the traditional commercial banks take advantage of that versus the smaller neobanks that have been benefiting as well from open banking and in terms of the role that they may play as well. So it could be very interesting, I think, in terms of the ideas, the agility, the innovation that this kind of potentially fosters over a period of time.
Plus the world of fintech or crypto and big tech. I think that there's a lot of interesting projects going on. You're probably the closest person I know, if I were to have a crystal ball, and I'm not going to hold you to this, but do you think we are close to getting a digital pound, or do you think this is still a few years away? Wholesale or retail? You can split if you'd like.
Well, good question. I mean, wholesale, as the UK Bank of England is going through a major RTGS renewal program at the moment, so that obviously is a major undertaking. And then in parallel, as we have Finality, which hopefully will get into production next year. So in that sense, that we'll have a synthetic wholesale CBDC in effect. So that's something which I hope is in the near term, given the effort and the investment that's being made as far as that effort is concerned. As far as the retail CBDC, as the Bank of England's public position, as far as I'm aware, is if the decision is made, then it would be the second half of the decade. And I think that's kind of reflective of the significant work still to do in terms of making the policy decisions on things like there's a wide spectrum of problems you could try and address with a retail CBDC, from financial exclusion, for example, where, you know, we have 1.5 million people in the UK who don't have a bank account at the moment, nearly 7 million that are at risk of being financially excluded. So are you trying to tackle that as a primary objective, in which case you're designing to solve for that problem? Or are you at the other end of the spectrum? Are you trying to solve for the kind of things we were just talking about in terms of what a future digital economy may look like and the role of stablecoins in that environment, the role that DeFi might have in a more regulated kind of context, the role that the metaverse may have, and whether you're designing a CBDC to play a role in that kind of context? So these are hugely different sets of requirements, and essentially decisions need to be made on where a first version of a CBDC will land in terms of functionality, and then working through the detail of how that could be implemented, what the technology choices are, blockchain or not blockchain, account or token, et cetera, et cetera, including any public-private partnerships needed to deliver it. So it's a major undertaking, a lot of complexity. I personally believe absolutely we will see a British stablecoin in that context, but I don't underestimate the effort to get there. So yes, for synthetic CBDC for wholesale in the short term, hopefully yes, but retail CBDC, you know, we're a number of years away. But I guess my point is we have a lot of good activities and initiatives that are taking place at the moment to facilitate that, including the launch, by the way, of an all-party parliamentary group dedicated to CBDC, as you might be aware, which is another good step forward, I think. And therefore giving the encouragement, all the encouragement we can to the bank in terms of the journey that they're on. And hopefully that from the parliament and political point of view, that's also seen as a positive. In large part, I think, being able to address the natural concerns that will exist on privacy is one of the major debating points as far as digital money is concerned.
I think we'll be watching the launch of the APPG for CBDCs with interest, as well as the Finality launch. I think all of us will be very keen to see how that goes. One of the areas that I think we touched on slightly, but the stablecoin area and a little bit the role of what crypto firms are doing in this space, I think it's been tainted recently, obviously, with some of the names dropping out, FTX most notably. But do you think these CeFi firms, so to speak, the centralized finance actors that are more, say, crypto native, do you think they can play a role in this, in the shaping of the payments infrastructure, the reengineering of money? And if so, what role? I know the big banks will have to engage for this to take off. This is the same with open banking. What's the role of CeFi in what you think is unfolding?
It's a good question, I think. And as you say, from a Cambridge point of view, we focus more on empirical analysis of evidence rather than crystal balls too much. However, having said that, I mean, I think, as we all know, just look at the facts, obviously, there have been a significant amount of withdrawals from centralized exchanges following FTX. The numbers I was seeing from Fidelity, there was something like a 17% reduction in funds over a 2-week period following FTX's failure, compared to, I think, a 12% reduction over 4 whole months prior to that. And so that is inevitably reflecting, I think, a concern on other centralized exchanges that may or may not have some of the challenges that FTX suffered from as well. And undoubtedly, I would assume, going to be a much greater regulatory focus on all parts of the crypto ecosystem, and including stablecoins in particular, because it's something most of us know that's going to be an immediate focus of regulation, both here in the UK and elsewhere, Singapore, et cetera. So that will be a factor. And obviously, that will have an impact as far as the role that centralized exchanges play as well. As to your broader question, I think it's going to be a question of these kind of factors coming together, the impact that regulation will have, the impact, how the market progresses from the current position. Clearly, there are multiple surveys which imply that there's still significant investor interest, both institutional and retail, in digital assets more broadly, as well as specifically within the crypto asset world. And therefore, I guess centralized exchanges will continue to have a role to play more generally. But it's going to change and evolve, I think, based on investor sentiment, based on potentially the evolution of DeFi, and particularly the evolution of the regulatory obligations that players will have, as both global standards from the likes of FSB and the local regional regulations that exist, like MiCA in Europe, et cetera, and the way that the UK is moving, that will all have a significant impact as well. So how those forces come together and what that actually means in practice, then that really does need a crystal ball, I think.
Which none of us have. And I think we're all trying. My last question is on DeFi itself. Obviously, a huge amount of innovations going on it's a pre-Cambrian explosion, so to speak, of a lot of people trying to find ways of working through on a smart contract layer where traditional finance has been offering things with a lot of steps or middlemen. Do you think there's a space for regulated DeFi down the road? And how much is the institutional world looking at DeFi and bridging? And it's something we're both interested in is this era of convergence between decentralized finance and traditional finance.
Absolutely. So, I mean, arguably, it's already here. I think taking Swarm as an example of that, which is a BaFin-regulated, decentralized, and I think their journey is really interesting. And obviously, there's ARC as well and other approaches that are looking to whitelist participants into DeFi protocols, for instance. So, you know, there's that. This is the kind of DeFi world making itself more accessible to regulated institutions. Then on the financial institution, the regulated institution sides coming into DeFi, obviously that's happening as well. We have Project Mariana, for example, that the BIS is leading with the Swiss National Bank and others, which is looking at using automated market making, AMM models for the foreign exchange market, for instance, as a POC. We have what some of the regulated institutions like SocGen and Huntington Valley Bank have announced that they're doing with MakerDAO, taking out loans in DAI, the stablecoin from the MakerDAO protocol, in order to finance activities. So the early stages, but it's interesting, I think, to see how the governance models for those, for MakerDAO in this case, have signed up and agreed to facilitate, make that possible, i.e. to accept real-world assets from SocGen in the case of bonds and mortgages in the sense of, in the case of Huntington Valley Bank, to participate in that kind of context. And the other very significant development, I think, from my point of view, is Project Guardian in Singapore under the auspices of MAS, which was a collaboration between JP Morgan's Onyx division and SBI in Japan, which was looking to see how regulated institutions could leverage a DeFi protocol, in this case, Aave, I believe, which was looking at tokenizing cash, tokenizing securities, being able to use the concept of trust anchors. So basically having the banks use W3C credentials as a means of validating who they are and they're a trusted entity for transactions that are taking place in a modified DeFi protocol in this case. And a very effective and well-written, I think, report on the results of Project Guardian, which give a kind of an action sheet, if you like, a list of actions as to how regulated institutions could take advantage of DeFi. Because at the end of the day, the IMF did a very interesting analysis looking at a number of DeFi protocols and what their marginal costs are for transacting on them versus traditional finance. And if I remember correctly, something like a marginal cost of 2% for the compound and one of the other protocols they were looking at compared to 4% for advanced economy banks and upwards of 6% for developing economy banks. So significant cost savings potentially there as a result of obviously the reduced human element. Operational costs are much lower, obviously. So, you know, the cost aspect makes it very attractive, I think. But obviously there's other questions in terms of security and risk of fraud and theft, et cetera, and bad actors, all of which needs to be factored in, which is where these the trust anchor model and regulation will have an impact as well. So I think in summary, I think there's a huge opportunity there. And convergence is a really interesting topic, I think, and well documented by the Realization Group's video, of course, documentary. But I think in some respects, we'll see a Venn diagram of DeFi on one side, circle, traditional finance on the other, and then an intersection in the middle, which is this regulated DeFi space, which is relatively small at the moment, but could, depending on how these initiatives develop, could get much bigger. And I think the only interesting question is how relatively big each of those three elements will become. Or some may shrink, obviously, and others may grow depending on the combination of returns and security and risk and regulation that will encompass all of them one way or the other, I think.
I'm always impressed by your encyclopedic knowledge and your way to frame things in very structured but intelligible ways. The concept of a trusted anchor is particularly interesting, I think, in the context of digital identity, so to speak, to know that you're dealing with clean actors. It's been a really fascinating discussion. Just a huge thanks. And again, delighted to have you and hopefully have you back. We could talk about digital identity or financial passports at some stage.
Sure. No problem, Anders. Again, thank you very much for the invitation. It's a pleasure. Thank you, John.